We live in a society that overemphasizes getting back up again. If you experience grief or trauma, you may be given a pep talk, told how strong you are, or otherwise encouraged to put the past behind you. But our minds and bodies don't work that way. Our symptoms might be physical, emotional, mental, or more, and we might not even realize they're connected to a traumatic event. If we don't take the time to process our experience, we will carry the burden indefinitely. This week, I'm talking with Nicole Lee, a trauma-informed life coach, about her experience with trauma after losing her mother and how she supports others in healing from their own experiences. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Files. My name is Kim Menninger, and as an executive coach and former high-tech leader, my personal mission is to help professionals overcome imposter syndrome so that you can advance your career with confidence. Each week, I interview a new guest who brings a powerful perspective to this conversation, including personal stories, best practices, and new insights. The more we talk about this issue, the more we destigmatize imposter syndrome, recognize that we're not alone, and empower ourselves to access the tools and resources that can help us and those around us. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing with others you think would benefit from this conversation. Welcome, Nicole. It is wonderful to have you here today, and I'd love to start by inviting you to introduce yourself.
Kim, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on the podcast today. I am Nicole Lee. I'm a trauma-informed, multidisciplinary healer, intuitive guide, and transformational life coach. I specialize in guiding individuals, particularly those who've achieved much success, but are feeling stuck, overwhelmed, or unfulfilled, and helping them rediscover who they are, heal through past pain, and chart a new fulfilling life for themselves. Before getting into this work, I actually spent 20 years, as a business consulting leader and executive coach, and I focus on driving large-scale change initiatives for Fortune 500 companies working domestically and internationally. What actually transitioned me into the work that I do now, I call it my soulpreneurship, because it wasn't my mind or body who decided to go in this work. It really was me aligning to my soul purpose, was through my mother passing in 2018. Following the loss of my mom, it really had me reflecting on who I was, how I was showing up in the world, what my legacy would be, what my life purpose is. And it really influenced me to take the leap from corporate America and go into the healing and coaching work that I do today.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, I feel like that's a great example of one of those pivotal moments that really forces a pause. You know, I think so often we're just moving, going through the motions, doing our thing. We're such creatures of habit, and we're not necessarily looking up. And then unfortunately something like that happens, and it changes things, right? Can you talk more about what was happening at that point that, and how you were able to decide this is the right next step for me?
Sure. And you're so right. It does change things. And I think so many of us go through pivotal moments. For me, being in business management consulting for so long, very driven work, right? The grind, the hustle, all those types of things. I stepped away to take care of my mother. So my mother was diagnosed in May, and she passed in September of 2018. And being a caretaker for her really put things in perspective around overall health and wellness. And so after she passed away, when I went back into the workforce, I literally was not the same. I could not function the same way that I could beforehand. Emotionally, physically, psychologically, something was different. And at that time, I wasn't sure what that looked like. I know now, going into trauma work, that through the loss, through the grief, right, there was trauma there that I had not processed and understood what was going on. And so not being able to perform the same way. I was having cognitive challenges. There were so many, and physically, I was malnutritioned. It was just a lot. I'm balancing going back too deep, but I was not in a great space physically, emotionally, and even spiritually, right? So going through that and recognizing something wasn't quite right, I started seeking out alternative healing methods. I had done that with taking care of my mother, but I became obsessed with it. So I became certified as a health coach soon after, became certified as a hypnotherapist. I went into energy healing. I went into all these other modalities and trying to actually help heal myself to figure out what was going on. And through that process, I actually received a divine message from my mother in 2020 to actually leave my job. I had no clue what that meant. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I could not stay in the environment that I was in. And so soon after, I quit my job. I became a consultant for the organization I was working for at the time. And then 2021, I literally took the leap of faith and figuring out what my divine purpose was.
Wow. And there's so much to what you just shared, Nicole. And I think when you think about the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual effects mm-hmm. of the experience of losing your mom, right? And how that showed up for you and coming back to the workplace. On the one hand, like you knew what to tie it to, right? Like there's this mm-hmm. sort of clarity around, I know that this is an effect of this trauma, this grief. It's incredibly challenging. And again, it becomes sort of that wake-up call to look around and see, well, maybe there's more that I can think about. I wonder, as you think about your own experience with trauma and how you see it and showing up in other people, like I can imagine that there are a lot of people who are experiencing similar kinds of effects that you're describing, but maybe don't recognize it as a response to some form of trauma.
Yeah. And I would say too, is that I did not fully understand that the loss of my mother would have such an effect on me, even physically and physiologically, that me going into trauma-informed work actually helped me realize that. So I think many times we recognize that there might be an emotional challenge, right? When you lose someone or something, or even a shift in your life, any type of loss may have an emotional response, but we don't always understand the physical aspects of that, right? So when you actually go through loss or grief, when you're going through a traumatic experience, you can have similar effects, symptoms that may show up in other ways, brain fog, headaches, anxiety. I actually suffered from panic attacks for the first time ever. I didn't even know what it was. I thought I was having a heart attack because I had not experienced that before. That was my body not being able to effectively cope or manage trauma that was actually in my body. Mm-hmm. So to your point, I think when we aren't aware of the effects of trauma, when we're not given the opportunities to actually reflect on and connect the dots of things that have happened to us, we don't realize the symptoms and how they're showing up. So to your point, there are many things that happen to us that we haven't necessarily been given the space or time to actually process and reflect. And so that's really what trauma is. Trauma is a psychological, emotional response to something that was distressing, overwhelming, or disturbing that we were unable to cope with in that point in time that has a negative effect on us short and long term in our emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental processing, our health. So when you start to look at trauma from that perspective, I think many people, given the time and space, to ask, wow, how did that situation affect me? Did I all of a sudden start having panic attacks, anxiety? Did my heart start racing? Did I start sweating? I'm having difficulty sleeping. All of a sudden, I'm not as productive as I used to be. That was an issue for me. I was a high performer. And for some reason, it was very difficult for me to get things that were very simple for me to do to get done. I had no thought process of thinking that was tied to my grief. It never even registered to me until I went into trauma-informed work.
I'm so glad you said that, because you're right. I think we have certain expectations of what grief or trauma look like in the aftermath, right? The feelings that we'll have. But it's so much more complex than that, and it's easy to overlook. And then when we start to experience it and we don't understand it, then yes. That becomes almost an opportunity for even more like self-doubt or criticism of,
yes,
you know, like, oh, I should be able to do, what's happening? Why am I not doing this? Right. And so it kind of compounds the already painful effects.
Yes. And that's so true. I love that you mentioned the complexity, right? I think that there's been certain things that have been simplified for the sake of making it easier, maybe to have conversations about, but it is very complex and it is based on each person. Right? There is no one size fits all. There is no quote unquote right or wrong way of processing these things. And that's the part too, when we talk about self-doubt or we talk about imposter syndrome and things of this nature, it is personal. And until we're given the opportunity to look at it from our personal lens, we'll constantly be in that cycle of comparison or trying to find the truth outside of ourselves. So the thing that when I work with clients is actually allowing them the opportunity of creating that space to acknowledge and validate their unique experience. That whatever they're going through is theirs. And in that moment in time that it feels real, it is real. And I think sometimes we bypass that because we want people to move through so quickly, because we want to say it's okay, because we want to motivate and inspire someone to see themselves as we see them. But when we don't allow people the opportunity and create spaces to validate how they're feeling in the moment, that is where sometimes we revert back, right? So I know you've probably been in a situation, I have too. When I was going through those moments, you're great, Nicole, you'll make it through. In that moment in time, that wasn't going to work for me.
Mm.
Right? That was not good enough. It was the moments that was getting validation that this is natural, this is normal. Give yourself time.
Oh,
understand. You know, understanding scientifically, biologically, what was happening to me, that actually created an opportunity for me to become more curious about what was happening to me beyond, right, just thinking that I'll push through it.
And there's so much, once again, to what you're saying, and there's sort of two paths that I want to go down. The first one that I want to acknowledge, and I love how you talk about validating someone's unique experience, is that I think that, again, we sort of have this definition or impression in our minds of what trauma means, and mm-hmm. that, and I found myself doing this too, of this, I'll be talking to myself and saying, people have it much worse than you, right?
Yes.
This is not something to be this upset about, or I can't call this trauma because it doesn't compare to what other people have experienced as trauma, right? So we sort of invalidate our own experience. And then again, that kind of gets layered on top with things like, well, if it's not real, then you should be able to snap out of this.
Yes.
And what's taking you so long?
Yes, 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 and yes, Kim. That process of invalidating ourselves through that comparison is something that is so common. And the thing that I've come to realize as well around that is that we're inundated with a lot of that type of messaging, right? Many of us may have even been grew up with that type of messaging. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other people in other countries that are suffering more. Get up and make it happen, right? Mm-hmm. So what we don't realize as well is, again, with trauma, it may not be when you're an adult. It could be things that happen as a child that you didn't realize are affecting you now as an adult. So some of these things around limiting beliefs, self-sabotage, we don't create those stories independently. Right? These stories are collectively created. And when we're subconsciously taking these things in, particularly when we're children, when we don't have critical thinking skills, right? When we're absorbing everything, that's actually wiring us to then make perceptions and interpretations around the world of what's safe, what our value looks like, what our worth looks like, what we can and cannot do in the world, how resilient we'll be or not be. And so, again, that's why it is so important to start validating in that moment and then becoming open to be curious of what has created the story you're now or the program you're now running. And again, validating that your story was co-created initially. You believed what someone said about you for whatever reason, whether they were an authority figure, whether they were a caretaker, whether they were in some other position where you felt like you needed to take that information in, that now has created the space that you're in today. So when we can have conversations from that perspective, then you also recognize that something did happen to you. Right? And then through that and that acknowledgement, then you can say, what part of this do I want to hold on to and what part don't I?
Yeah.
Right? Because now I get to feel and acknowledge that I was not in full control the entire time. And I think this happens to us, particularly as adults, when we don't have the opportunity to validate what's happened to us as young people. We go into spaces as adults feeling shameful, feeling confused, and feeling overwhelmed, and thinking that we have to carry the entire burden because no one actually gave us the opportunity or opened the space to say, actually, what you're carrying, you didn't put it all in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so that's something that I think is really, really important for us, is to start looking at what happened to us and who contributed, whether it was an environment, an individual that contributed to the thought processes and the wiring in our body of how we show up in our, and not being in our authentic selves.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that too, going all the way back to a time when our brains did not have the sophistication to process messages mm-hmm. in a more nuanced way. And we had very little power or agency at that time yes. in our lives. And I really think about our brains as sort of being a database of all of our experiences, right? And so I often use the analogy of the hot stove. Like when you're a mm-hmm. child, you touch a hot stove and you learn that is not safe and I'll never do that again. But a lot of times the hot stoves that we file away are more interpersonal types of dynamics. Or like you said, someone that had of an authority figure told you something about yourself that wasn't safe or whatever. And so you want to avoid that pain going forward. And it's showing up in patterns that you may not even recognize in your work life, in your personal life. And so we talk about, you know, trauma, there may be a triggering incident, but it also may just be an undercurrent that's been part of your life that you haven't even stopped to recognize.
Yes. And that level of awareness, right? I mean, we live in a culture that you're just supposed to get back up. I mean, I'll just keep, reiterating that. I mean, I know the work you do is to help set that tone and give yourself time, right? And work through these things and have a level of awareness. But much of the outside world is not creating that space, right? To actually go through these things, like you're saying, of like, okay, let's put these things together. Like you have all these puzzle pieces. How do all these things fit? Right. And you mentioned the thing around the stove that is very fascinating is we spend a lot of time, we talk about the mind and, you know, how that works in the brain. However, we also feel, right? So we're actually taking in that data and, like you say, in that database, but there's also an imprint in our bodies. So when we touch the stove, there's a thought process. It's hot. It's the feeling that also is imprinted in my body. Now, when I see the stove, I actually may get the sensation of my fingers burning. Right? So that's the part two of recognizing the connection between the mind and body and the impact. It's a thought of seeing someone and not understanding why your heart starts racing. Because in that database, there's something there, but the feeling is actually showing itself. And it's not until you have the time to walk through that to say, wow, when's the last time you felt that way, that you walked in a room and you saw X and your heart started racing? Oh, man, I remember that teacher when I was 13 and I was getting ready to go up on the stage. And they told me beforehand, if I didn't get all the lines right, I wasn't going to get the spot or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you correlate, because then what happens is the feeling imprint, it's not the person in front of you. It's a representation of that teacher. Mm-hmm. So that's how we then start to make the connection of the past having an effect on my present. And again, that's where we get the validation because, yes, I'm now realizing that it's not what's happening in my current reality, but there's something from my past that is taking over my present reality. So what do I do to help me heal from those elements of the past that now does not trigger me moving forward? And that's the rewiring piece that's necessary in our nervous system, again, because there's an imprint in my body that's correlated to that experience.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, it's true. When you show up, let's say when your boss is criticizing you or you're in a meeting where you're feeling intimidated, you're showing up as your like five-year-old self, right? Your 8-year-old self. You forget that you're not that same person anymore. It just takes you right back to that powerless, vulnerable place.
Yes, when you didn't have control, right? And even if it's that child self, I'll even go to this because I think this happens even often is if you've had a traumatic experience, say when you even joined the workforce, right? Your first job and you were super excited, and you did not have an empathetic, caring, supportive supervisor or leader or manager. The effects of that can then show up 10, 20 years later when you are now in your VP position. Because attributes, for example, of that manager now show up in your C-suite leader that you're reporting to, that you may have never even noticed until those similar attributes showed up in that person.
You're right. It's so powerful. I often think about that too, is that if you have an experience where you learn that it's not safe to trust somebody that you need to trust in order for you to feel safe, right? Then even the people who come behind them or, you know, come down the road who show up in a way that is seemingly opposite, there's still a part of your brain that's waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? There's still a part of you that's thinking like, can I really trust this person? Is this really safe? Or they just don't know me yet? Or, you know, we just haven't encountered an opportunity for their true side to come out.
Exactly. Because your brain, right, and your nervous system goes back to whatever that program is running, we'll just use program, right? That says, is this a safe situation or an unsafe situation? Mm. Okay. And based on whatever the data that you have, it could be artificial intelligence, right? Like, because there's based on that data, it may not be the full reality, but there's enough data points that says in your brain, I have evidence to say this is unsafe. It then shuts down the logic part of your brain that says, well, no, that person is totally different. That happened 10 years ago. you know this person is nice. It shuts that down because the evidence that holding on to and that feeling was so intense that the rest of that logic goes away in that moment. And I bring this up because that's the work that when I've worked with clients, when we slow things down and they start to see that it's not actually, like we say, the current reality or the person in front of them. It's how that person represents other parts of them that aren't healed.
And right? The nervous system piece is so important to this because I think about, I'm often thinking about just sort of for simplification, the fight or flight response. Right?
Yes. And that's part of the nervous system. Yeah. That's the part that we get into where we're making safe or unsafe. And then we decide, are we going to fight or flee?
Yes. Exactly. Yes. So are you helping them manage that? Like, what is it? And I don't want you to have to give away your secret sauce.
Right? Oh, it's not secret sauce. I will give away whatever we need to go. Wherever we need to go, we'll go.
But what's the first step? Like what's an action? Because I'm sure there's so many people listening who are feeling seen and heard right now. Mm-hmm. And they're also naturally going to be thinking, okay, so now what? Right. So,
yeah.
So once they've identified, yes, this is me, what's the first step?
Yeah. So I think that the first step is what we've talked about in a bit is that acknowledgement, right? And validating yourself. Mm. Just starting there and saying, wow, I'm seeing these pieces come together. It isn't this present moment. It's all the things that happened to me that actually have not been given the voice or the message or the language before. I think that's the first place to start. Because just being able to validate our own feelings and knowing that they're unique, that they're personal, you know, and that how other people interpret things is maybe not the same you are, that empowers you to say, yes, this is my story. And it's important to me. Mm-hmm. Along with that, right, is also recognizing you aren't alone, even though that is unique. So the more that we start to feel comfortable also being able to express these things, then we can create a greater sense of community and connection, because oftentimes we internalize and we keep that to ourselves, which can create the elements of guilt, shame, confusion, stressors, right? So I think that's important. If there's at least one person in your world, in your circle that you trust, that as you're recognizing these things, that you can share them. When we talk about from a nervous system perspective and, you know, just the language, if you don't want to get all scientific, right, you can use the buckets of when I feel calm, at peace, safe. Right? When we talk about flight or flight, when are those moments and times that I'm not feeling that way? The heart's racing, or there's other things that are happening that I know that I'm not comfortable in my body. I don't fully feel safe. What does that look like? What does it feel like? What are examples of what those things look like? Because what that does is you actually start to see patterns for yourself. And then you can also become more empowered of being aware, not only of just your thoughts, but actually how it shows up in your body. So you do that, you go to the other, and then the other one is feeling immobilized. That's kind of the red zone, right? When do I feel like I want to shut down, or I'm burned out, or I'm exhausted, right? I'm feeling elements of just feeling paralyzed. What does that look like? What does it feel like? What are examples of that in your life? So anyone at that point, without going in all the details, if you made those three buckets or categories, again, you start to see certain patterns. Are there certain people or environments you're in that you start to recognize this happening? And that may fall out certain things from childhood that start to surface. Because the other thing is, when we're at a suppressed state, we shut down those memories.
Mm.
Right? Because we've packed them down in our heavy backpack. And then when we have these curious conversations with ourselves or with others that we trust, it starts to open those doors back up.
Yeah.
And so this is why when working with a coach or a therapist or a mentor, someone you trust, right? I'm a big advocate of finding someone you trust to at least start the journey. Now, if you need deeper support, right, obviously going to a therapist or a professional, a medical professional is very important. Starting the process, though, of just finding that safe space if you feel that you can't do that independently is really important. And the research shows that finding someone that you trust and is relatable can have similar effects of going to a therapist. Because again, our goal and desire is to feel safe and trust that us opening that space that we'll be seen, heard, and understood. There was just one last thing that I would say too, depending on where people are on their journey, right? Because some people may say, you know what, I've done that. I've been geeking out on my nervous system, you know, because everybody's at a different level. I would say then if you're at that level and you kind of have a greater sense of awareness, just using something simply of what's the evidence of this. So if you're having the moment where you're like, I'm feeling like a fraud, you know, there's no way I should have gotten this or whatever that looks like, what's the evidence of that being true? And what's the evidence of that being false? And what typically happens is you find that there's not the truth in the present moment, right? You did the work. You spoke eloquently. You did all that was necessary for you to be in that position. It's just the moment that you realize that it's going in the past. So just going through, like, what's my evidence of that being true today in this present moment? And if you find that there's something where you're like, well, I didn't do X, then you keep going. Well, what does that look like in this present state? Why do you feel that way? What's bringing that about? Oh, that was so-and-so boss. Well, let's look at the evidence of that person. Was it personal or is that their personality type? Because what I find in that state, Kim, is many times you find that sometimes the people that you're taking as a personal kind of a attack in some ways, you see that they may have those personality traits and attributes that they do that to everybody. Right. Like, and then you get to disconnect yourself from the personal element and then again, see the evidence of it being you or other people or an environment that's impacting that. So I've used that as well for those who are a little farther along in their awareness of just going like, what's my evidence of this today? Is that really true today?
Yeah, these are great suggestions, Nicole. I think there's so much power to what you're talking about. And I'm a big believer as well as sort of understanding what your triggers are, really paying attention to what's happening when I'm showing up this way so that I can look for those patterns. And ideally, it will help me to reflect a little bit more like you're talking about and also prepare for. If I know every time I step into a meeting with this type of a dynamic, I tend to get triggered. Well, what can I do proactively?
Yes.
To plan for that, right? And so to just kind of maintain as much personal control and power as possible, because again, we kind of become that powerless child and we forget that we have choices. And when you talk about the evidence and just kind of looking at that other person as, is this a person who does this to everyone? Maybe at the end of the day, the conclusion is this is just not a place where I can thrive, right?
Exactly.
This is a manager that just doesn't have the kind of leadership style that I need in order to do my best work. And that doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. It's more about taking your own power and saying, I'm going to contribute my skills and talents to a person in a system that values me for who I am.
Yes. And I love that, Kim, to your point. Once you go through the level of awareness, that next step is, and what do I do? And what part do I control, right? What part do I feel empowered as my next step? So perfect, right? And I think that the big thing is that acknowledgement, the awareness, and then you get to action. So I think the simple way of kind of looking at that is, right, acknowledging that something has happened, either in the past or in this moment, right? Having that level of awareness of how I function and operate in that, from everything for how I think, how I feel, how I believe, and better understanding what is at the root cause of these things? And then what's the action I want to take or desire to take to move me forward? That could be similarly leaving that job, having more support systems in place that help validate, support, and affirm me. That could be altering certain things that you're doing that aren't contributing to you moving forward in the way that you desire. So I guess that's the three A's.
I love it. I love that. Yeah, and I also find it helpful in the bigger theme of not feeling alone. This is kind of a different twist on it. I think it's helpful sometimes to recognize that the way that everyone else around you is showing up is a function of their own experience as well. And so often it's just our tendency as humans to personalize every situation, to blame ourselves, to think like, oh, there must be something wrong with me. When in actuality, if someone is showing up in a dysfunctional way, that's their stuff, right? That's their lack of healing in different areas. And unfortunately, when it's somebody in a position of power, they have a lot more influence on our experience. But, you know, too often we confuse somebody else's baggage with strength, right? But people who are truly confident and healthy and functional people don't wreak havoc on the people around them, right?
Yeah, Kim, that is so true. So that gets to just the foundational piece, right? Of, like we say, the personalization of recognizing that individuals who aren't showing up in that way have their work to do. To your point. And the more too, I think that this is where if we move out of judgment and observation. So I know we talked personally, like, what does it look like for me? I'm observing myself. That then does go to how am I observing other people? Right. And recognizing that individuals who are not supporting you, who aren't empathetic, who don't have those traits, are in a situation in which they may not be aware they could have been recognized or reinforced for that behavior. And that is also where I think we take back our agency that you mentioned of what action I want to take. So if I can't influence, impact an individual who is not showing up effectively, then do I now need to take control and me move out of that environment because I'm worthy of being respected and supported and acknowledged, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a whole nother line of where we recognize there are a lot of individuals who are in positions that aren't effectively qualified to support others.
Yes.
And I think that's where we take back our control of recognizing that we deserve to be treated with respect and to be validated and to be respected, right? Like all of those things. And I do think that's where sometimes in these hierarchical structures and organizations, individuals can feel defeated, right? And again, that's where I come up with the trauma pieces where you have been traumatized, you have been treated inappropriately, and people did not see or validate or respect what was happening to you. And I think our overall worth and getting back to understanding that about ourselves is so important because that's how we continue these processes and people need to be held accountable for when they aren't effective leaders.
Oh my gosh. You're so right, Nicole. We could spend a whole other conversation just talking about that piece, right? Like that really was such an important part of the conversation. I am just so grateful to you for sharing this because I think it's so relevant to all of our experience. I don't think any of us as humans goes through life unscathed, right? We may have experiences, but you've given us such a powerful way to think about it. And I love the action steps, the sort of plan that you gave to us as well.
Well, thank you, Kim. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. And I hope that it does support someone in their journey of reconnecting with themselves and feeling empowered to live their best life.
Absolutely. And so for anybody who wants to learn more about you, your work, where can they find you?
Sure. So my website is Nicole, N-I-C-H-O-L-E, Lee, L-E-E dot L-O-V-E, Nicole Lee dot love. You can send a request to work with me, which we can schedule some time just to chat. I'm also on LinkedIn as I am Nicole Lee, and on Instagram, I am Nicole Lee.
Thank you so much, Nicole. And we'll link to those in the show notes as well. It's been such a pleasure having you here.
Thanks so much, Kim. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Imposter Syndrome Files. If you would like to continue this conversation in a safe and trusted space, I would love for you to join my virtual discussion group every Thursday at 12 p.m. Eastern. For the past several years, the group has been limited to women, but it is now open, regardless of gender, to anyone who is interested in exploring and troubleshooting common workplace challenges, building better awareness of ourselves and others, and becoming more inclusive allies at work. Check out the show notes for more info on how to find us. And please join us next week for another episode of the Imposter Syndrome Files.